crowd. The glove icon at last flicked to green in his HUD. He was ready to start the virtual reality tour. Trumbull cleared the display from his visor, then tapped his wrist keypad for the radio frequency back to Mission Control at Tarawa. It would be 28 minutes before his signal reached Earth, and their confirmation and go-ahead returned to him. He spent the time plotting out the route he would follow through this little travelogue. "Mission Control to Trumbull," at last came Connors' rich baritone voice across 100 million kilometers. "You are go for the VR tour. We have 16.9 million subscribers online, with more logging in as we announce your start time." "We'll hit 20 million easy," Trumbull thought happily. "At 10 bucks ahead, that pays for almost half of our ground equipment. We're going to make a profit out of this expedition." The Zeeman family, father, mother, 9-year-old son, and 5-year-old daughter, sat in the entertainment room of their suburban Kansas City house in front of the wall-to-wall video screen. Only one corner of the screen was activated. A serious-looking black man was explaining that the transmission from Mars took 14 minutes to cover the distance between the two planets, even with the signal traveling at the speed of light, which is 300,000 kilometers per second, he emphasized. The 9-year-old shook his head emphatically. "It's 299.79 kilometers per second," he corrected righteously. His sister hissed, "Shh!" "Put your helmets on," their father said. "They're going to start in a couple of seconds." All four of them donned plastic helmets that held padded earphones and slide-down visors. They worked their fingers into the wired data gloves, mother helping her daughter, the boy proudly doing it for himself, then pulled the visors down when the man on the screen told them the tour was about to start. The black man's voice counted down. 3, 2, 1. And they were on Mars. They were looking out on a red, rock-strewn plain, a ruddy, dusty desert stretching out as far as the eye could see, rust-colored boulders scattered across the barren, gently rolling land like toys left behind by a careless child. The uneven horizon seemed closer than it should be. The sky was a bright butterscotch color. Small, wind-shaped dunes heaped in precise rows, and the reddish sand piled against some of the bigger rocks. In the distance was something that looked like a flat-topped mesa jutting up over the horizon. "This is our landing site," Dexter Trumbull's voice was telling them. "We're on the westernmost extension of a region called Luniplanum, the plane of the moon. Astronomers gave Martian geography bizarro names back in the old days." The view shifted as Trumbull turned slowly. They saw the habitat dome. "That's where we'll be living for the next year and a half. Tomorrow I'll take you on a tour inside. Right now, the other members of the expedition are busy setting things in order. You know, housekeeping stuff. By tomorrow, we'll be able to walk through and see what it's like." Not a word from any of the Zeemans. Across the country, across the world, people sat staring at Mars, fascinated, engrossed. "Hear that faint, kind of whispering sound?" Trumbull asked. "That's the wind. It's blowing at about 30 knots, practically a gale-force wind on Earth, but here on Mars, the air's so thin that it's not even stirring up the dust from the ground, see?" They felt their right hands groping into a pouch on the hard suit's leg. "Now watch this," Trumbull said. They pulled out a toy store horseshoe magnet, red and white. "The sand here on Mars is rich with iron ores," Trumbull explained, "so we can use this magnet." They crouched down laboriously in the bulky hard suit and wrote out the letters M-A-R-S in the sand with the magnet, as Trumbull said. "See? We don't have to touch the sand. The magnet pushes against the iron in the grains."
"I want to write my name," said the Zeeman daughter.
"Shut up," her brother snapped. Both parents shushed them. Trumbull pocketed the magnet, then bent down and picked up a palm-sized rock. The viewers felt its weight and solidity in their gloved hands.
"The rocks that are scattered all around here were torn out of the ground," Trumbull explained, straightening up. "Some of them might be from volcanic eruptions, but most of them were blasted out by meteor impacts. Mars is a lot closer to the asteroid belt than Earth is, you know, and so gets hit by meteors a lot more.
They seem to be walking away from the dome, out toward a boulder the size of a house. Red sand was piled up on one side of it.
You can see a field of sand dunes out there, said Trumbull, and they saw his gloved hand pointing. They must be pretty stable because they were there 6 years ago when the first expedition landed.
The pointing hand shifted against the tawny sky.
Over that way you can see the land starts rising. That's the eastern edge of the Tharsis Bulge, where the big volcanoes are. Pavonis Mons is roughly 600 kilometers from us, just about due west.
The view shifted again, fast enough to make some viewers slightly giddy.
To the south is the Badlands, Noctis Labyrinthus, and about 600 kilometers to the southeast is Tithonium Chasma, the western end of the big Grand Canyon. That's where the first expedition found the Martian lichen.
Turning again, Trumbull walked toward a small tractor. It looked almost like a dune buggy, but its wheels were thin and springy-looking. It was completely open, no cabin. The seats were surrounded by a cage of impossibly slim metal bars. The viewers saw themselves slide into the driver's seat. The Zeeman boy muttered, "Way cool!"
"I want to show you our standby fuel generator," Trumbull said as he started up the tractor's engine. It clattered like a diesel, but strangely high-pitched in the thin Martian air. "It's about 2 clicks, kilometers, from the dome. Been sitting out there for more than 2 years now, taking carbon dioxide out of the air and water from the permafrost beneath the ground and making methane for us. Methane is natural gas. It's the fuel we'll use for our ground rovers."
Before putting the tractor in motion, he turned around and leaned slightly over the vehicle's edge.
"Take a look at the boot prints," Trumbull said. "Human prints on the red sands of Mars. No one's ever walked here before. Not in this precise spot. Maybe you'll put your footprints on Mars someday."
"Yeah!"
the 9-year-old whooped.
Trumbull drove 28 million paying viewers, and their friends or families, slowly toward the fuel generator.
"It's not much to look at," he admitted, "but it's a very important piece of equipment for us. So important, in fact, that we carried another one along with us."
Once they reached the squat cylindrical module, Trumbull got out of the tractor and rested a gloved hand on the smooth, curving metal side of the generator.
"Feel that vibration?"
Dozens of millions did.
"The generator's chugging away, making fuel for us. It also produces drinkable water for us."
"I'm thirsty," the 5-year-old whined.
Trumbull walked them around the automated module, found the main water tap and poured a splash of water into a metal cup he had brought with him.
"This water is Martian," he said, holding up the cup. "It comes from the permafrost beneath the surface of the ground. It's laced with carbon dioxide, sort of like fizzy soda water. But it's drinkable, once we filter out the impurities."
As he spoke, the water boiled away, leaving the cup utterly dry.
"Martian air is so thin that water boils even though the temperature here is below zero," Trumbull explained. "The important thing, though, is that there's an ocean of water beneath our feet, all frozen for millions and millions of years. Enough water to supply millions and millions of people someday."
Mrs. Zeeman murmured, "I didn't know that."
After precisely one full hour, Trumbull said, "Well, that's all for today. Got to pack it in now. Tomorrow we'll walk through the dome. In a few days we'll be sending a team and one of the ground rovers out to the Grand Canyon. Later on we'll fly 2 people out to the shield volcanoes in the rocket plane. And we'll be flying the unmanned soar planes over longer distances, too. If all goes well, we'll fly them out to the old Viking 1 landing site and maybe even farther north to the edge of the ice cap."
Through all this, the viewers stared out at the Martian vista.
"But that's all for the future," Trumbull concluded. "For now, so long from Mars. Thanks for being with us."
For long moments, the Zeeman family sat unmoving, unspeaking. At last, they reluctantly pulled off their helmets.
"I want to go to Mars," announced the 9-year-old. "When I grow up, I'm going to be a scientist and go to Mars."
"Me too,"
his sister added.
Dinner time, Sol 1.